Thank you for downloading this podcast from policyreview.tv.
Now we've got 10 minutes or so, a little bit longer perhaps, for questions from you. I don't know, David, if there are any points that Anne raised there that you might want to answer about sort of flexibility, for instance, of specialist qualifications for small employers, for instance.
Well, I thought, as you said, John, I mean, having a sort of reality check is always useful. I mean, some of the points that Anne made, I did touch on, although she was able to unpack them somewhat with more specific examples. I do agree with you about the fact that employers do need to find their way through to a provider of their own choice and own that relationship more easily than they can at the moment. And I think if I look at the inquiries we get from employers for apprenticeships, increasingly they do come through the website. And being able to, and I think we're waiting on the Jason Holt review of SMEs, and I know he'll have something to say on that, as he will do on the funding rates. So I think you've raised some very good questions. I personally would be very happy to work with Bruce Chamber on trying to make our website even more employer-friendly.
And the employer
toolkit that we have been working with employers, I think, will help a bit. So I think you've highlighted a number of areas where I would say, we still need to be making improvements in those areas. I think they're not new to us, but there are things that we have been working on that I think those are very helpful insights into further improvements we need to make.
Would anybody like to come in at this stage, and in particular if you're watching online, please do email us a question if there's anything that you want to raise as well. Yes, please, at this time. Right.
My name's Jed Latham, a business development manager for Oldham College. My question's around standards and maintaining quality. The largest training accredited awarding body in the UK has now decided it will deliver qualifications themselves. They're going to produce their own assessors, their own internal verifying, and they're going to carry out their own external verifying. Who's going to scrutinise the scrutineers?
Well, I mean, in part, I mean, there is, of course, a responsibility of Ofqual around this particular territory. I don't know whether the standards is the standards review going to be looking in this area or not. Not sure. I mean, but I think there are some really significant changes in the landscape in the way that you've described. I mean, whenever we look at this, you know, we need to ensure that there are sort of appropriate systems and processes in place to make sure that the integrity of the process is there. Those are the sort of assurances that we have at the moment. That I think it has become an area of closer interest, as in the recent 6 months or so, we have seen some very big providers moving into those areas. So it's a very, very current issue. I think we wouldn't be funding these bodies if we didn't have the assurances we looked at. But I think you're right to highlight that this is a sort of a changing nature of the landscape, and therefore probably does bear further examination. Because the fact you've asked the question, I think, illustrates to me that there is an issue of confidence of the sector. It's not just that the processes are in place, but they need to be seen by everybody in the sector to be in place. So if that becomes an issue about the confidence of the sector, then it's something we need to ensure that everybody does understand the arrangements that are in place, and if those arrangements aren't as good as they need to be, that those are addressed. So whilst I feel confident about the arrangements that are in place, it is a significant change to the landscape, and therefore if it is an issue that the sector is increasingly wanting to feel more confident about, then I think it's right to address it.
Is this something that standards reviews looking at?
I mean, I think to the extent that, as you've touched on in various ways through each of our three talks, the key test has to be that employers and learners are able to exercise choice, and that should be our greatest safeguard against kind of capturing different bits of the system. So people should be confident that the qualifications they're investing their energy in, investing their money in, are delivering the things that they want, and that if that isn't the case, that those qualifications won't have value, won't be recognised. That's only true at the moment to some extent. That needs to be more true across more parts of the system. But I think that's our greatest safeguard, in addition, as David has said, to the, I suppose, to kind of the formal structural safeguards in the system.
Thank you. Anyone else like to come in? Yes, please.
Thank you. Scott Upton from Sandwell College. I had the good fortune recently of meeting with Jason Hock with a small number of members from the Association of Colleges. And we were looking at this idea of how do you get the flexibility but maintain the standard within the programme so that, you know, you get more SMEs engaged. And one of the things that we pressed him quite strongly on was that the government should consider allowing providers to deliver 80% of standard apprenticeship frameworks funded, and then to flex the final 20% using any units from any of the frameworks that are approved and have all gone through the QCF accreditation. And that way, it would give you the opportunity to really sort of tailor the, you know, get under the skin of that SME and tailor the apprenticeship framework so they actually met what they wanted, like your sail maker and your jet washing people. And I just wonder what the panel thought about that as an idea.
Whoopie-doo. Yes, please. Yeah, no, seriously, I think that with small companies, they are extremely diverse. So and one apprenticeship framework does not fit all, as it were, and 250 doesn't fit all. And so we do need exactly that sort of flexibility. And it's often not that much of a tweak, but the tweak that's required is so critical to the success of the business or otherwise. That's what makes the difference. So that sounds like a really good suggestion to be explored.
I mean, there is some flexibility. I mean, I agree with the thrust of what Scott's saying. I think there is some flexibility at the moment. We often find when there is flexibility in the system that information about flexibility isn't owned by the employers. They aren't as aware of it as they might be. Mm. And I think there is a slightly wider question, which is I meet a lot of employers who will say there isn't a framework that meets their particular needs. And sometimes I know that we're training thousands of apprentices in that particular occupation. And so we end up having a conversation with the employers, and they're some quite big employers on occasions, to help them through this process. So that suggests to me that there's more work to do, both on communicating the flexibilities as well as, in Scott's point, about ensuring the flexibilities is actually there, but making it easier for employers to not be put off who want that flexibility. We think we're delivering it, but somehow the connectivity isn't there. And again, I should be interested in what Jason Holt has to say about how we can access that particular information, because it's coming at us quite loudly now.
And I also think that it's very hard. Employers don't know about these things called frameworks. Why would they? Mm-hmm. And they wouldn't know where to look for them either. So I think, you know, something much easier access to what those frameworks are and what sort of competence they are, so that people can almost pick and mix and just sort of mix it up a bit.
I think a lot of employers will say to us that there's a lot of commonality across a sector. Mm. But, you know, there's 20%, if you like, exactly, is unique to them. So there is something in what employers are saying. Much of it is common to the industry, but it's just a bit which gives them that unique selling point or something which makes a real difference.
Sorry. And we are, I mean, just to say that we are starting to do this from the coming academic year. So the very smallest companies will be able to add on a couple of extra modules. So in recognition that, particularly in the very smallest companies, often individuals will play a broader role. They'll need to be more involved in just the wider running of that business outside of their distinct job role. So we're definitely starting to create funding provision for exactly what you described, but no doubt there's further to go.
We are sort of up to coffee time, but if anybody would like to put in a quick question before we break, then please do, because I wouldn't like you to miss your opportunity. The NAO report seemed to be wanting, if not targets, at least a sort of a clear direction or something like that. I mean, is that something that the coalition is looking at, or are you prepared to sort of let employers go as they please?
I mean, as we've touched on, it is definitely a balancing act. We're absolutely not in the world of targets. We don't think that will, you know, that will help us achieve what we really want, which is a system that is led by the needs and demands of employers and learners. But we do understand and appreciate that within what we've said is a very big and broad programme, there are particular elements of that programme which either deliver greater returns and therefore are worthy of an extra push, or need extra government intervention because for whatever reason that sector, for example, might be less, you know, less organised or less well equipped to do that themselves. So it is absolutely right to say that government will focus its efforts and attentions across certain parts of the programme, but not to the extent of setting targets.
Right. Presumably there's a tension between when you're looking for the areas that have the greatest return, there's the greatest financial return and there's the ease of doing something about youth employment.
Absolutely, and that's partly why, you know, we need to do this in a kind of more nuanced and sophisticated way. Right, you know, this isn't simply a question of saying, right, we've got an £18 to 1 average, you know, where is that highest and focusing there. But often because those sectors that deliver the very highest returns are actually very well capable of making their skill systems work for themselves. In some of the sectors where on paper the straight financial return may be somewhat lower, the actual broader benefit of government getting involved, often to take out of some of the lowest skilled parts of the workforce, can deliver much broader, longer term returns, both for the individual and certainly for the country more widely.
Yeah. Fine. Now, one last chance because we are actually over time for the session. If not, thank you very much to our speakers. I think it's been an excellent introduction to the day.
Thank you for listening to this podcast from policyreview.tv. For more details, go to www.policyreview.tv. Please note that this audio is subject to copyright and cannot be used by other broadcasters or for commercial gain.